This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
Next in a series investigating possible causes of the sudden record heat in 2023 and 2024, we find a new factor no one is talking about. Land plants react to weather extremes, including drought, and they capture less carbon. That means more of our daily emissions stay in the atmosphere, possibly pushing climate heating. Carbon dioxide poured into the atmosphere at a much faster rate in 2023. Even record fossil fuel use cannot explain it. A massive new study suggests natural recapture by CO2, always happening by land plants, has collapsed during record heat. From the Institut Pierre-Simon-Laplace, a top-level research institute west of Versailles, Dr. Philippe Sieyès joins us. Philippe, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Hello.
So research begins with a question. What did you and your 15 co-authors set out to answer?
The question we try to answer is why do we have such a very high growth rate of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere in the year 23? And also, where is this weaker uptake happening?
How big was the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere in 2023 compared to the average in the previous decade?
Well, it's a record high value, and the amount of CO2 growth is 3.37 parts per million. This is definitely well above the average growth rate, and I think it's something like 80% higher than the growth rate that was observed in the year 2022.
Well, this is very serious for the world climate, of course, if we escalate the greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere. The world has never burned as many fossil fuels as we did in 2023. How do you know that that burning and cement making are not the direct cause of the jump in CO2 rates that were observed at the Mauna Loa Observatory and by satellites?
Yeah, the reason why we know that it is not entirely explained by fossil fuel emission is that because we see this abnormal increase from the year before, and on the other hand, fossil fuel emissions have not decreased, but from energy statistics, two different approaches, we found that they only increased by 0.6%. And by no means, the increase of fossil emissions in 2023 can explain the entire anomaly of the growth rate that we see in the atmosphere. So the answer must be that natural sinks in the land and the ocean must have been weaker in that year.
Last November, you and I talked about a doubling of global fire carbon emissions in the year 2021. In 2023, fires over northern Canada were frightening, even astounding, releasing carbon that could change the global climate. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, indeed. We have seen very massive carbon losses by boreal fires in 2021. Those losses was located in Siberia. And in 2023, we see loss by an almost equivalent amount happening this time in Canada. We are talking about a big number. We are talking about fire carbon emissions larger than 0.5 billion tons of carbon. That is equivalent to 50% of the fossil emissions from the United States alone. So it's definitely a very big signal that is contributed to the increased growth rate of CO2 in the atmosphere.
I note in the paper, it says global dynamic vegetation models have, quote, strong weaknesses in capturing extreme forest fires such as those observed in Canada, like the ones we were just talking about. Does that mean we don't really know how much carbon those 2023 Canadian fires released?
That's a very good question. The models we use for looking at the carbon budget are not very good indeed at estimating fire emissions, in particular from extreme fires, because it's very difficult to understand what are the drivers, like the propagation or the susceptibility of forests that create extreme fires. And that is the reason why, instead of trusting models that will not be good enough We have used observation based on satellites, two types of observations, to estimate the fire emissions in 2023. One of these observations is based on burnt area, and we can see black areas where they are burned from space, and we can estimate the amount of carbon that has been burned. The other approach is using the amount of energy which is produced by fires, and this energy is proportional to the carbon emissions. And both independent satellite estimates point out to record high fire emissions in Canada during the year 2023.
But when you investigate the total carbon cycle for northwestern North America, at least in that fire year of 2023, your team found a balancing factor of some kind. Talk to us about the role of greening.
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because on the one hand, over the part of the forest in Canada and North America that has burnt, we have very huge fire emissions. But at the same time, this was a very warm spring. And warm springs are boosting the carbon uptake by the vegetation. So paradoxically, there were huge fire emissions. But overall, over the entire territory of Canada, the forests are greener and they take up more carbon than usual. So as a result, in our study, we found that the carbon losses from the fires, which will not be recovered anytime soon, have been nearly offset by very large spring uptake because of the warm spring during the same year. So we see a widespread greening and small dots of browning that correspond to huge fire emission. And the two of them, the losses and the gain, seems to nearly compensate for 2023. So the answer for why do we see an increased growth rate of CO2 in the atmosphere is not just due to the Canadian fire. The answer must be elsewhere.
And looking elsewhere, we also have to rule out tropical Africa, where there were wetter conditions and more greening again. So where is the biggest drop in carbon capture happening?
We think that the biggest loss of carbon capture happened in the Amazon, because the Amazon forest and the big Brazilian Amazon region was subject to an extreme drought in the late part of the year. On the other hand, this year is also an El Nino. And normally, El Nino years mean no more water, no more rainfall over tropical Asia. And we found indeed that over tropical and equatorial Asia, there was also carbon loss to the atmosphere. And the third thing is that over Europe and Asia, northern Asia, the temperature was extremely warm, like it was elsewhere in the northern hemisphere. And we think that those regions have not absorbed as much carbon as they do during the year 2023. So it's a bit of a compound event where you have massive losses from the Amazon drought, you have additional losses from equatorial Asia, and you have a missed carbon uptake in the rest of the northern hemisphere.
So when you add it all up, it used to be we always thought that, well, land plants are part of what are saving us from extreme climate change because they're absorbing a lot of carbon. We call it a carbon sink. But adding it all up, plants on land have become a carbon source.
Yes, in 23, plants still remain a sink, but a very small one compared to the average. On the one hand, this already happened before. We have frequent El Nino, and during extreme El Ninos, like the last one was in 2015-2016, we see also a drastic reduction of the carbon uptake by plants. Well, this happens again in 23, but what is surprising is that 2023 was not an extremely strong El Nino. It was, in fact, a wetter and cooler part of the year during the first half of the year. And the El Nino was really modest. It only developed during the last months of 23. And despite this very modest El Nino, we see a very high growth rate of CO2 to the atmosphere. So this is what is perhaps a little new and that needs to be studied before, of course, we can say that it's very alarming and we won't enjoy any more carbon uptake by plants. But what is alarming is that it's not a very severe El Nino, and we see a drawdown to almost zero of the vegetation uptake of the Earth during the last year.
And scientists already have a measuring system for how much CO2 is being emitted on the oceans as well. Are the oceans capturing less CO2?
No, in fact, we found that the ocean in 2023 were either stable or increasing uptake, because when you have an El Nino, like it was the case during 2023, there is a suppression of the outcrop to the atmosphere of deep water in eastern equatorial Pacific Ocean. In normal years, when you bring deep water up to the surface, it outgasses CO2, because the ocean deep water is rich in CO2. And this upward motion of deep water in the Pacific is usually suppressed, so that makes the carbon sink a bit higher. On the other hand, we know that the warming has been exceptional everywhere, not only over the land, but also over the ocean. In 2023, we have a lot of marine heat waves, and it's still unclear if those marine heat waves have decreased the uptake of carbon by the ocean in the regions where they happened, or if they have favored algae's productivity and carbon uptake. So this is still something that needs to be resolved. What is the impact of ocean heat waves that happened in 2023 on the ocean uptake? But overall, using our emulators of ocean models based on artificial intelligence, and also using this atmospheric observation that allow us to map the spatial pattern of the ocean carbon sink, we believe that the carbon sink in the ocean was not weakened in 2023. Things bad happened mostly over the land.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Philippe Sier from the Institut Pierre Simon Laplace in France. We're discussing the collapse of the carbon land sink in 2023, a big surprise for many of us. Your paper finds, quote, record warming in 2023 had a strong negative impact on the capacity of terrestrial ecosystems to mitigate climate change, a very serious statement. And heat over most of the northern hemisphere has even been more extreme in 2024. Felipe, what is the role of extreme heat waves in releasing more carbon into the atmosphere?
Well, extreme heat waves can release carbon in the atmosphere from different factors. On the one hand, when the soil is very dry, when the atmosphere is very dry, plants cannot take up CO2 from the atmosphere by photosynthesis, so they capture less CO2. On the other hand, if the heat and the drought is severe, plants can also die from heat, from water starvation. And dying plants, of course, will create additional carbon losses to the atmosphere. So this is why heat and drought are particularly detrimental to carbon uptake by the vegetation. And they happen now at a level that was never observed before. So we don't know if our current forests are resistant enough to the occurrence of those new, very severe and very hot droughts.
Russia has more land area than any other country by far. There must be huge interactions over Siberia, but I don't see any mention of Russia in the new paper. Is that due to a lack of data or no change, significant change in their carbon numbers?
Well, indeed, Russia is very huge and it has very diverse forests. But if you look at Siberian forests, we do see over the last decades that the forests have been very likely losing carbon because of fires, in particular extreme fires, occurring more frequently. On the other hand, you have other areas of Russia in the western part, which is wetter, where the forests seem to continue to take up carbon, in particular because some of these forests are very young. They have been created from the abandonment of agriculture in parts of Russia after the 1990s. So on the one hand, we think that Western Russian forest may be taking up carbon, while Siberian and Far East forest are probably losing carbon at the moment. And indeed, monitoring the carbon balance of a huge territory like Russia is extremely challenging, but it's also extremely important for understanding the global carbon budget.
So the hotter the world gets, as we continue to pour greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, the weaker nature's vast carbon capture system becomes. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, well, there is a lot of variability from year to year, and this variability allows us scientists to better understand the response of plants, soils, and ocean to climate variability. On the one hand, climate models do predict that the carbon sinks will become weaker in the future, but not now, maybe in the next 50 to 60 years. And what we see now is that we have extreme warmth, we have extreme drought, and this causes extreme fires and also tree mortality. So we have to continue to monitor the response of the carbon cycle to extreme climate events to understand if we may be closer than what we think of a durable long-term weakening of the carbon sink. We just have 1 year in 2023. It's, of course, very alarming to see that the carbon sink can collapse. But we have to see what happens in 24 and in the following years, in particular in the Northern Hemisphere, where extreme boreal fires are likely to continue, to understand if the trends of weakening carbon sinks is continuing in the next year. This is very crucial for better understanding what the future will be.
Do you expect the higher carbon release, over 3 parts per million increase every year, will continue? Is this the new normal for now?
Well, we don't expect good news because with occurrence of extreme warm climate, we know that this is not good for the plants. We know that fire regimes are going to change and increase burnt area and carbon emissions. So we don't see any sign or any reason why forests will take up again more carbon in the future. So this is the reason why we are worried about maybe not a collapse in 1 year, but a significant weakening of the capability of the vegetation and the soils to take up carbon from the atmosphere. And we have to monitor very closely what is happening now in 2024 and during the next year as warming continues to be exceptional.
Well, it sounds like this might bring a terrible hot world even closer than the most pessimistic models predicted, and it might come sooner than expected. Or am I just worrying too much?
It's only 1 year, so we have to see how the situation evolves in the coming year. But we have reason to be pessimistic because the models which are used, in particular by the IPCC, to project the land carbon sinks have a good deal of carbon dioxide fertilization, which is a process that helps take carbon by the plants, but they did not describe the processes that can trigger massive carbon losses by the plants and by the ocean, such as extreme fires, such as abrupt permafrost thaw and release of carbon dioxide and methane, and drought-induced mortality. So the fact that those models are ignoring processes that could cause massive carbon losses is a good reason to worry, and it's also a good reason to work to try to improve their models and to collect observations in such a way that we can assess the quality of the models which are used for the projections of the carbon sink in the future.
A couple of decades ago, a lot of scientists were looking at a continuing increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and a sort of ramp of conditions following that. But then there's been a lot of work by scientists recently about tipping points. Are you aware of any tipping point in this carbon cycle that involves all of nature?
Well, tipping point are difficult to assess because we don't know, you know, where they are ahead of us, if they are very near or if they will happen long in the future on when the warming will be higher than today. But we do see that there are fast changes in the regime of carbon sinks. For instance, fires. We have never seen such large extreme boreal fires as they occurred in 2021 with the heat waves over Russia, and again in 2023 with heat waves and very dry conditions over Canada. And unfortunately, fire season seems to be also very high this year again in Russia. So we seem to see a very strong acceleration of fire regimes, and fire can contribute, being a tipping point of the carbon cycle. We don't have any good evidence that there is a massive loss of carbon from frozen soils, from permafrost soils, in the Arctic, although locally we see that those soils can unfreeze very abruptly, and when they unfreeze, when they thaw, we have a very high loss of CO2 and methane. So abrupt permafrost loss is another feedback or another possible tipping point that we don't see yet expressed, but we have to watch it very closely. And maybe the third very important tipping point for the land is the vulnerability of biomass-rich tropical forests in the wet tropics, like in Amazon or Central Africa, because those systems are both exposed to continuing deforestation, so there is carbon loss by human activities, to degradation. Degradation today is losing as much carbon as deforestation in the Amazon, and also to drought-induced mortality, as we see for the latest El Nino in 2015 and for the recent drought in 2023. So the third important tipping point, in my opinion, is the vulnerability of wet tropical forests in the Amazon and Africa to a drought in the future.
Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners about this research and what it means for us?
No, I think it's just important to take the pulse of the carbon cycle and to analyze the carbon budget region per region and nation per nation as quickly as we can, because it's only by having a quick understanding of what is going on, which is what we try to do in this study, that we can get enough knowledge to understand how the carbon cycle could be protected from extreme events and how the carbon sinks are going to evolve in the near future. So it's really the call for providing low latency scientific assessment of how much carbon is lost or gained as climate change proceeds, because from this we are learning essential information for the future.
From France, we've been speaking with Dr. Philippe Sieyès, Associate Director of Laboratoire des Sciences du Climat et de l'Environnement. That climate lab is located at the Institut Pierre-Simon Laplace, and the new paper submitted July 17, 2024 is titled, if you want to look it up, Low Latency Carbon Budget Analysis Reveals a Large Decline of the Land Carbon Sink in 2023. You can read it for free, even as a non-expert. It's well written, and you can find a link to it also in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Philippe, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. The new science we just talked about implies a positive feedback where a warming world reduces land ecosystems' ability to capture and hold carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. That adds more warming. The hotter the world gets as we continue to pour greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, the weaker nature's vast carbon capture system becomes. As one thing speeds another and tipping points are crossed, I think the rate of global warming could speed up beyond anything we have ever seen or predicted. We will see. On the other hand, the greening of the Earth has continued in 2023 and reached peak values in Midwestern USA, parts of Equatorial Africa, Central and Southeastern Europe, Southern Brazil and Northern Australia, as well as some parts of former desert in China. The CA paper says, quote, "The year 2023 thus provides evidence for a decoupling between global greenness and carbon sinks over land," end quote. We did not get time to cover climate chaos in the Southern Hemisphere as late summer ended. For example, on August 26th, Australia experienced its hottest winter day ever recorded, topping out at an unbelievable 106.8 degrees Fahrenheit, or 41.6 C. That's in winter. Over at Climate Code Red, David Spratt says, "Within 40 years, large parts of Australia will be unlivable due to extreme climate heat. But don't worry, the new Conservative government in the Northern Territory has just abolished the climate change portfolio." At the end of summer, there was a strange heat wave over Antarctica, as I have said, as atmospheric rivers are delivered right to the poles. I have an interview on that coming up. According to Colin McCarthy at U.S. Storm Watch, on September 8th, it was 116 degrees Fahrenheit, or 46.7 C, in Beverly Hills, California. I've lived there. It was never like that. The minimum temperature in the hills of Malibu was 96 degrees Fahrenheit, or 35.6 C. Fires raged, burning homes and large landscapes. Mexico tied its hottest September temperatures ever with 49 degrees C, or 120 Fahrenheit, at Presa Morelo. American scientist Zeke Hausfather, who tends to be conservative, says, quote, August 2024 was 1.49 degrees C above pre-industrial levels, and now 2024 is virtually certain to be the warmest year on record, end quote from Zeke. A study published this September in Nature Geoscience says extreme weather will strengthen rapidly over the next two decades. May you live in interesting times. That is supposedly from an ancient Chinese curse where interesting is ironic for trouble. But for what it is worth, I still enjoy parts of most of my days. While strange things explode in the Middle East and weird weather chases us, we must make room for joy in our lives. Joy is necessary, like food. It is the simple things, like people, pets, and plants, changing light in the sky, and signals of the seasons. To be aware and grateful. I wish you some happiness every day, even in the storm. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.
Tree. Heatwave blues can't escape the heat. Dancing in the sun on burning concrete. Heatwave blues, no relief in sight. Dangerous days and sweltering nights. AC's busted, it's hotter inside. Slow like the heat's worldwide. Ice melting fast in my glass of tea. Time's crawling by in this misery. Look up to the sky, hope for a breeze. Wish for a cloud, bringing song ease. Turn on the news, hear the weatherman. Says more heat to come. Neighbors all groan as the sun beats down. Front porch empty, deserted town. Dogs lie still under shady trees, searching for cool in this fiery sea.
Stefan Ramsdorf
with Nate Hagens.
Land areas typically are warming twice as fast as the global average temperature. And when we're talking about a planet that is 3 degrees warmer in global mean, for most land areas, that is more like 5 or 6 degrees Celsius warmer. And that is really a drastic change. It means that all your vegetation is not adapted. The forest will probably die near your house or go up in flames and all these things.
I actually didn't know that. So if we go to a 3 degrees Celsius climate change, which is a global average, that the land where I am in Minnesota or where you are in Germany or India or wherever, on average will increase 6 degrees Celsius, which is almost, which is over 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. And I mean, that is not new. This has been known already since the 80s, 90s. I mean, it's obvious. It's very basic physics, but it tells you something about how the media are discussing the climate issue, that most lay people that I talk to when I give talks, etc., they don't know this very basic fact, and they wonder what's so bad about 2 degrees warming, because they don't realize that's then 4 degrees where they live on land, for example. And so it's weird how the things that have been known to the scientists for many decades, the basic facts, are not out there in the public. Instead, all kinds of pseudo debates about whether global warming is actually caused by CO2 and all this stuff is been going on for decades in the media, because interested parties are pushing that, and the media are not doing their job properly, in my view.